Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 29th. Let the record reflect the time is 3:15 p.m. or 3:16 p.m. Today we have present Representative Sadler, Representative Wright, Representative Prox, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff that will be assisting us today are Jordan Wright with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and my staff, Clark Bickford, Committee Aide to House Labor and Commerce. On today's agenda, we have first bill hearings on HB 88 from Representative Rauscher and HB 126 from Representative Wright. Before we get into bills, we are going to take public testimony on last week's three governor appointees. We heard from Sarah Rasmussen for the Board of Pharmacy, David Koch from the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, and Chris Jamie from the Marijuana Control Board. I'm now going to open public testimony. And looks like we don't have anyone online. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on any of these three appointees? Nope, seeing none, we will close public testimony. Vice Chair Ruffridge, what's the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In accordance with AS 3905-080, the committee held a hearing on the following appointees, Sarah Rasmussen, David Koch, and Chris Jaime. And we will report these out from committee. A signature on this report does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of these individuals during any further sessions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Ruffridge. Please sign the committee report. Moving on to our first bill hearing on HB 88 from Representative Rauscher. Please approach the committee, put your name on the record, and begin your presentation. I understand you also have Patrick Fitzgerald, political coordinator for the Alaska Teamsters, online for invited testimony.
Thank you. My name, for the record, is George, Representative George Rauscher, District 29. I'd like to thank the chair of LNC and the members of this committee for hearing this bill today. House Bill 88, Warehouse Workers Protection Act, is designed to provide transparency for warehouse and logistic workers when they are agreed to pay scale based on quota or production goals. HB 88 is also designed to provide protections for workers against counterproductive methods employers miss the mark on to speed up production and try to save on costs. Alaska is one of the most beautiful states in the country, with its salmon runs, wild game, and natural resources. Abundance of the state is a blessing, but there is still a need for supplies and goods to be imported, stored, and or delivered. The workers who manage the logistics of these imports are the unsung heroes of Alaskan food security and supply chain. With over 90% of the food coming from outside of Alaska, these workers are the lifeline to keep the state operational. Warehouse logistical workers face many challenges in the workplace. HB 88 will allow workers to focus on delivering goods and maintaining a healthy supply chain while also ensuring that they are able to work in a safe environment where employers don't encourage speed over safety aspects. And at this moment, I'd like to turn your attention to my Chief of Staff, Brian McKee, who will go through the sectional for you, if that's okay.
Go ahead, Mr. McKee.
All right. For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. Section 1 amends AS 23.10 by adding in new sections. So Article 9, work quotas at warehouse distribution centers. Section 23.10.700 specifies what types of employees the newly added sections AS 23.10.700 through 23.10.725 apply to. specifically 100 or more employees at a single warehouse distribution center, or 1,000 or more employees at one or more warehouse distribution centers in the state. Section 23.10.705 specifies when an employer that is subject to AS 23.10.700 through 23.10.725 need to provide a written description of each quota that applies to the employee. It further describes what needs to be included in that written quota description. Section 23.10.710 states what specifically an employer is not allowed to require in order for employees to meet quota expectations. Section 23.10.715 states that a current or former employee may request orally or in written or in writing a request for a quota description, and specifies what needs to be included in the request, as well as a timeline for when an employee will receive the requested description. Section 23.10.720 states that an employee may seek an injunction in the Superior Court to enjoin an employee violating AS 23.10.700 through 23.10.715. Section 23.10.725 provides definitions for terms listed in the above language, and then Section 2 sets an effective date for January 1st, 2025. And then also, this has a zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. I think we'll go online. Mr. Fitzgerald, if you want to. And then we can take questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patrick Fitzgerald. I'm the political director for Teamsters Local 959. I'm invited testimony for House Bill 88, the Warehouse Worker Protection Act. I want to thank the bill's sponsor, Representative George Rauscher, and staff Ryan McKee. We're both running a marathon today. This is their third bill hearing. I'd also like to thank Chair Sumner and the House Labor and Commerce Committee for hearing this legislation. House Bill 88 will add to statute two protections for warehouse and logistic workers that prevent predatory practices in the future. First, House Bill 88 will provide transparency for quota-based pay positions in warehouses by notifying the employees of their quota rate from the start of their employment and any changes that are made as the employee progresses and are effective in meeting their work speed goals. This will also allow workers to be fully aware of their expectations set by their employers as well and allow them to best meet those goals. House Bill 88 also creates a mechanism for employees to request their work speed data that their employers are using to track their progress and speed. Employees having access to this data will bring solutions to the work environment that has been problems with retention because of quota-based pay operations. House Bill 88 provides protections that have been proven to reduce workplace accidents in quota-based pay jobs, such as allowing for times for restroom breaks and reasonable workloads to prevent high turnover rates. The idea of this legislation is to protect workers who maintain and operate the warehouses that store 95% of food that comes into Alaska, conducts logistics for all construction materials that come into the state to build our future, and work to ensure that those in rural parts of the state are able to stay connected to a strong, consistent supply chain for food, medicine, and other goods. Please protect Alaskan warehouse workers and pass House Bill 88. And, of course, I am available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Questions for the bill sponsor or Mr. Fitzgerald? No? Okay. Everyone loves it. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to the sponsor or anyone who can best answer it, I'm just looking on page 3, line 8, a pretty good definition of quota, but I'm just trying to wonder where the line between a quota and a general employer expectation of productivity might lie. What constitutes a quota, separate or beyond or less than just we hope you do the work assigned to you?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it's my understanding, since I actually worked in a warehouse at one time, quota would mean you perform X amount of duties, whether it be like moving X amount of boxes or whether it's X amount of pallets or whether it's X amount of truckloads or whether it's X amount of whatever in a certain amount of time to be considered a to have done your work correctly. Does that answer your question?
It does. Just to so it's a pretty clear delineation. It should be pretty clear to decide what is a quota as opposed to we just expect you to work hard.
Okay. Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, I have never worked in a warehouse. What are some of examples of the problems that have occurred that we're trying to address?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, I can say that, and this is Representative Rauscher for the record, I could tell you that I used to work in a plant called GAF. GAF was a shingle company. They made all kinds of shingles. They made fiberglass shingles, but they also made that stuff, the asbestos shingles back then. And they made rolled roofing. They made all kinds of rolled roofing. I, those with a not much intelligence and a strong back, you ended up on the assembly line, and that assembly line was moving, and then you had a quota of how much you were supposed to get packaged on a pallet and get ready for the truck in an amount of time that you had to do it. So there are, I'd say, times when I watched a guy, you know, just sit there faint because it was in the East Coast, and temperature was probably about 100 degrees, and he was still supposed to keep the quota up at the temperatures of when it was a lot less cooler, you know, a lot more cooler. And so I guess that would be one example. I'm sure there are many out there. If you'd like, I could turn the question over to my lifeline on television there, and maybe they can give you a better answer.
Mr. Fitzgerald, if you would, please. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize. This is the first time I've testified virtually, and I'm not sure if there's a process for how to indicate that I'd like to say something. But getting to Representative Prox's question through the chair, this legislation provides transparency. And a little anecdote for that is when I was 20 years old, I was working in a warehouse that supplied a lot of the snacks, soft drinks, things like that for a lot of the gas stations up along the highway in Alaska. I was 20 years old. I was in good shape. I had no problem filling my quota every day. Over the summer, we hired a gentleman who was, he had worked in warehouses before, but he was in his upper 50s. He took the job, and after his first week, he had missed almost every daily quota he had because he was unaware of the quota request that was going to be given to him when he started his job in the position where he was hired to. This legislation would indicate when the employee is hired, what their quota is, and what the range of that quota, how it changes. So that's something that's a big part of what this bill addresses is, you know, if you go in for a job and you realize it might be a little bit more, you bite off a little bit more than you can chew, then this would establish that before the employee is hired to save time on both the employee and the employer.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair, to Mr. Fitzgerald, I would assume, is there a couple of examples for a warehouse distribution center with 100 or more employees in Alaska? I guess I'm not familiar with what those would be.
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, we have, as a representative of the Teamster Union, I know that we have over 100 in our Safeway warehouse for those operations. The larger ones I would expect would be Odom, U.S. Foods. I don't have the exact numbers, but I'm happy to get that information back to the committee.
And then just a follow-up, if I may, what would be, and this may be for the bill sponsor, the impetus behind the selection of the number 100? If this quota, it seems like a reasonable request to know this up front. Regardless of the size of the warehouse, why select that number?
Through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, I believe that the number was selected. It had to do with basically, when you get a sizable amount of workers together, it's a lot different than one or two, where you have an interactive working relationship with a small group. So you have a large group, you have people that are working and they're meeting quotas that you're more or less separated from that. You want to know how production is being made. You want to know the numbers. You want to know this. You want to know that. And you don't sit there and you just watch a person, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's done by quotas. And when you get a large number of people, this is where it comes into play, where you actually worry more worried about numbers than you are the actual people that you're working with.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to probably to Mr. Fitzgerald. Are quotas something that is a negotiated item in a contract, or is that something that management imposes on workers at their unilateral discretion?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler. It depends on the contract. Sometimes when you're operating with bargaining units that have quotas, they'll be outlined in the contract. An example, you know, you look at Longshore, Madison, Tote, as well as the drivers there, they have quotas because obviously the shipping containers need to get off the boat at a certain time in order to get out the door and keep those logistics kind of continual. Safeway Warehouse, you know, I don't have either of those bargaining units, so I can't speak directly to the contract. But it's something that every contract can have them. Some don't. It's a contract by contract separation.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Prox.
Thank you, through the chair. did GAF get out of the asbestos business?
Director to the bill sponsor.
Through the chair, I'm not sure, but I believe they did.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, we will set this bill aside for a future date for public testimony, and we will move on to House Bill 126 from Representative Wright. Representative Wright. Please approach the committee, put your name on the record, and begin your presentation. And I understand we have a Rachel Budden in the room for invited testimony.
Through the chair, I apologize for the confusion. Rachel Budden is doing available for questions, and she is telephoning in. We have two last-minute people joining. We've got Ginger Scootman, and she's from the Department of Health. And we also have Jen Saviors from DECD.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed, Representative Wright.
Representative Stanley Wright, District 22. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing HB 126 today. House Bill 126 proposes a tiered licensure system for professional counselors in Alaska, which would create a clear path for qualified candidates to become licensed as associate counselors before going on to becoming licensed professional counselors. Currently, there is no structured support available for postgraduate behavior counselors. This system would allow Alaska with national standards, ensure ethical and effective services, increase public confidence in the counselor's profession, and improve access to mental health services. A tiered system encourages career advancement and professional development, which will attract and retain qualified candidates to our state. Thank you again for hearing House Bill 126. I will now pass this over to Rachel Gunn, who will go in further detail.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, I'm Rachel Gunn, legislative staff to Representative Wright, and we'd like to thank the committee today for hearing Bill 126. HB 126 creates a dual-tiered system for licensure within the counseling profession. This is an issue that was brought to our office by the Board of Counselors. Currently, there is limited guidance and support available to those who have finished their graduate education in behavioral health but have not yet met the requirements to become licensed professional counselors. Establishing a designated associate counselor license ensures that those qualified individuals will be better set up for success as they work towards full licensure. There are several reasons why an individual who would qualify for this associate counselor license type might struggle within the current limitations of the system. All professional counselor candidates in the U.S. must complete 3,000 hours of counseling with required supervision, which can take an average of 2 to 6 years to complete. In this time, if a supervisor leaves the state or the field entirely, they have little proof to submit to the board, which can derail their entire career. They might never go back and obtain full licensure. And we see this, it happens in Alaska, it happens all over. In this time, with this bill, the board will be able to adapt standards of reporting to ensure the individuals can continue their accrual of hours as they work towards full licensure. Currently, individuals in this supervisory phase exist in sort of a limbo. Issuing them a license with the Board of Professional Counselors would certainly allow for career advancement and professional development. Attracting and retaining quality talent is a top priority, and the system of licensure will address this critical issue. We are all aware of the urgent need for quality access to mental health resources, and the lack thereof is a well-documented root of many of the problems we face in our state. At this point, I would like to turn things over to Rachel Budden-Young, a licensed professional counselor who sits on the Alaska Board of Professional Counselors. She's going to be available for any questions.
Hi, through the chair, this is Rachel Budden-Young, member of the Alaska Board of Professional Counselors, and we believe that this is going to help make a great improvement for the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. Just a question for you. How long has this issue, been in front of the board? Have you guys been waiting for a while for some sort of statutory change for this? Or is this something relatively new?
Well, as they had mentioned before, this would help put us in line with national standards. Our board has been working on it for probably the past 6-8 months just to be able to get in line with national standards, just to be able to give support and help those that are in that in-between limbo stage.
And just a follow-up, if I may.
Go ahead.
Approximately how many individuals would this essentially apply to for the associate counselor position?
Unfortunately, that's one of the issues that we have because after someone gets their master's, there is no accounting for that member until they apply for licensure. So this is actually going to help provide the availability to know, like, what do we have up and coming? How many people do we look at getting licensed? How can we better support them? Because right now, there is nothing to indicate that they are practicing in Alaska before they have that license. So that is why this is being recommended.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I guess I have a couple, one scoping question first and then a deeper question. Not sure who can answer the question best, but briefly run down the educational experience qualifications for a current counselor and what they would be different for an associate counselor.
Through the chair.
This is Rachel.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Young. So currently, as I had stated before, you have to have 3,000 hours to be fully licensed, and that has to be under supervision to be able to get your LPC. So that would still be the same qualification to get the LPC, but to get the associate's license, you would just have to have your master's. So it is meant to serve, the associate license is meant to serve as that in-between time of supervised experience while they are working on that experience to get their full license.
Okay. And follow up to, so I understand the associate would need a master's, and they would be allowed to be licensed as an associate, perhaps en route to a full licensed professional counselor. And when you say 3,000 hours, does that imply that it's a master's degree plus 3,000 additional hours? So what are the educational or experience requirements for the full licensed professional counselor?
So the only other difference that was there for the associate license is that they would have to have a master's degree and be under supervision. And then for the full license, you would have to have pay all of the appropriate fees. They have to do background checks. They have to have letters of recommendation. They have to have specific hours and specific courses to be approved to make sure that they have a qualifying degree. They have to have the 3,000 hours under a supervisor that's been approved through the State of Alaska Board. And they have to have appropriate continuing education hours if those are applicable.
Very good. Thank you. A brief follow-up.
Go ahead.
Good chair. Ma'am, so I just want to clarify. So you have to have a master's for the associate. You also must have a master's for the full professional counselor. Is that correct?
Correct. So in the counseling field, you cannot counsel until after you have a master's.
Okay. Great.
Thank you. And from the time that you have your master's, you have to accrue 3,000 hours of practice under supervision to be able to get your license. But right now, we don't have anything governing those people that are working on those hours, and that's what this is license is going to do.
Thank you. And if I may ask more detailed question now, Ms. Through the chair, what services would a full counselor be able to provide that an associate counselor would not be able to provide?
So a full licensed, they are able, the primary difference is that a fully licensed counselor can bill insurance, where an associate or anyone who is not fully licensed cannot. That's usually the primary difference. And then you also have one that is required to be under supervision, where a fully licensed is not required to be under supervision.
Okay. So is there any qualitative difference between the two, or is it simply a matter of practicing under supervision or not, or ability to bill insurance or not?
The experience level
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and let the record reflect that Representative Fields and Representative Carrick joined us at 3:41 p.m. Seeing no other questions, we're going to set this bill aside for future date and public testimony. That concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 3:44 p.m.